Hello and welcome to the SRNA Ask the Expert podcast series. This episode is titled Prevention and Treatment of Skin Breakdown. My name is Chrissy Dilger and I am with the Siegel Rare Neuroimmune Association. For this episode, I am pleased to be joined by Janet Dean and Florence Hansen. Janet Dean is a board-certified pediatric nurse practitioner and is also a certified rehabilitation registered nurse. She specializes in the prevention and treatment of the common health consequences of pediatric spinal cord injury. Florence Hansen is a nurse coordinator at the Kennedy Krieger Institute's International Center for Spinal Cord Injury. Her primary interests are in wound care and the continuous outpatient health care for those living with spinal cord injury and disease. You can find their full bios in the podcast description. SRNA is a nonprofit focused on support, education, and research of rare neuroimmune disorders. You can learn more about us on our website at wearesrna.org. This episode is made possible in part by the generous support of Amgen, Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease, Genentech, and UCB. Thank you both for joining me today. I am excited to talk about the prevention and treatment of skin breakdown. You know, this is an important topic that unfortunately many of our community experience, but I think having this information is a great tool to alleviating any problems that may come and helping to prevent the problems. To begin, can we just have a basic overview of how the skin works? Janet, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So your skin is actually your largest organ, and it covers your entire body surface, as we all know. And it's very tough, and it's pliable, and it forms a protective shield. It protects you when it's intact from infection. It's important for maintaining your body temperature. And it also gathers sensory information from your environment, such as painful or pleasurable sensations. There are three layers of your skin. The outermost layer is the epidermis, and that's generally made up of mostly dead skin that's being constantly shed or replaced. The middle layer is the dermis, and it contains your sweat glands, your nerve endings, and small capillaries and hair follicles. And these are all woven together by a protein called collagen, which provides the structure for that layer. And then lastly, your innermost layer is the subcutaneous adipose tissue or fat tissue. And it's a layer of fat and collagen that houses larger blood vessels and nerves. And this layer is important. It does help with controlling your body temperature as well as your skin temperature. And it's a shock absorber and padding to help prevent injury to the underlying areas. And for the most part, your skin is very tough. It's very pliable. It's very resistant to injury. And it has a very amazing ability to repair itself and to heal after injury.
Great. Flo, do you have anything to add?
No, I think that covers it in a nutshell. Yep.
Yeah. Great. So obviously the skin is resilient, but skin breakdown can occur. So can you talk about what skin breakdown is and what the different types of skin breakdown are? So do you want to take a stab at this one?
Okay, sure. Yeah. When we talk about skin breakdown, it's basically an injury to any of the layers of the skin. If it's an epidural breakdown, that's usually very just much on the surface, but we can get injury all the way down through all the layers up until even the bone. And of course, the more layers involved, the more serious that kind of thing can become. Yeah, so there's something as like abrasions and skin tears to pressure injuries, which can go from not very much to pretty deep. there's healing is impacted by things like circulation, nutrition, infection, those kinds of things.
Great. And I believe we'll get into those things in a little bit. Yes. But thank you for providing that overview. And Janet, was there anything you'd like to add?
Just that skin breakdown can start out as very small areas, and it sometimes you cannot tell how bad the injury is by what you see on the skin. And so without treatment, it can quickly go from little to very bad.
Yeah. How does paralysis affect the skin, and what are the risk factors of paralysis? Janet, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So paralysis, people with paralysis are at increased risk for skin breakdown, and the paralysis itself affects the underlying tissue because there's loss of collagen and weakness of the skin, making it less elastic. There can be lack of muscle function with paralysis, so there can be more atrophy of the muscles around bony areas, making skin more at risk. People with paralysis or difficulty moving can often have difficulty shifting their weight and may need assistance to do that, and need to be very diligent about remembering to do pressure release. It also can limit your ability to sense when you need to do weight shifts. And then people with impaired sensation can have hazards from other types of environmental sources. They can have problems with sunburn. You can have problems with burns if you put your laptop on your lap and it gets hot and you don't know it. Cold packs or frostbite can cause burns when people may not be aware. So, you know, people with paralysis and lack of sensation just have to have much more of a heightened awareness of their body and their external environment.
Great. And Flo, do you want to add anything to that, or does that cover it?
Yeah, I think that covers it. I think with the muscle loss, there's also probably impaired circulation, especially dependent, because blood flow tends to have a harder time going back up to the heart when you're paralyzed and you're in a chair and your legs are in a sitting position for a good part of the day. That was the only thing. Yeah.
Great. And so we talked about the different types of skin breakdown and what it is. Can you talk about what causes skin breakdown? Flo, do you want to?
Okay, sure. A lot of factors. We touched on pressure. Pressure is a big one for this population, just because our normal indicators that tell us to move aren't there because of sensation impairment. A lot of things like transferring in and out of your wheelchair can cause friction or shearing injuries. Also, sitting in a chair, there's a lot of chance of moisture buildup that we don't normally have or see. And that alone makes the skin weaker and more prone to injury.
Got it. And Janet, was there anything else?
I think that's good.
Great. So we touched on this a little bit earlier in a previous question, but besides paralysis, what are other contributing factors to skin breakdown? Janet, do you want to start us off?
So other factors that contribute to skin breakdown can be poor nutrition. Weight can contribute, and that is true of either overweight or underweight can cause issues where you just don't have, as we said earlier, any padding around the bony prominences. Other things like smoking or anemia or other vascular conditions. Diabetes can impair like circulation and oxygenation of your skin and put you more at risk for skin breakdown. And then also as we age, skin becomes much less resilient and less pliable, more friable. Even people without a paralysis become more susceptible to skin breakdown as they age. Children are much more resilient than adults with paralysis as far as skin goes. We usually don't see much skin breakdown in the younger children because they're just moving all the time. As kids get older and into more teenage years, they're not so interested in doing the things that need to be done to maintain your skin. And they get bigger and heavier, and there's more weight on bony prominences. So teenagers is when we start to see issues with skin breakdown because of multiple factors that I just saw.
Very interesting. I see how that makes sense, but it's not something I would have thought of had you not mentioned it. So very interesting. Chloe, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Nope, I don't think so. That covered it.
Thank you. And I appreciate that overview of skin breakdown and what causes it. But now can we go into prevention of skin breakdown? I know there's different ways that you can protect your skin and practices to help, I guess, lessen the chance that you might experience a scrape, abrasion, or a pressure ulcer. To get into it, can you say what the first step is in preventing skin breakdown? So do you want to start us off?
Sure. I think one of the most important things for our population is just daily skin checks. Develop a daily routine of monitoring and taking care of that skin. Employ assistance if you need it, or even there are mirror devices that can help if you have difficulty with certain areas. Obviously, the backside is probably one of the most challenging, but it is also one of the most common places that we see skin breakdown. Because the earlier you catch it, the easier it is to heal it and less complications. It can take a long time if something really sets in. I'd say daily skin checks would be the number one priority.
Great. Thank you. And Janet, was there anything you wanted to add?
In addition to the daily skin checks, people have to be very vigilant about doing pressure release. And there are many different ways to do pressure release, leaning forward, leaning side to side, reclining your power wheelchair, turning every 2 to 4 hours in bed at night. Those are also very important as part of your daily routine.
Great. Thank you. So prevention of mechanical injury is something we know helps keep skin healthy. Janet, can you talk about what mechanical injury is and how to implement this practice?
So mechanical injury is often a friction or a shear injury. And it often occurs during transferring or repositioning. When you transfer to and from your wheelchair, it's really important that you lift your bottom and not drag it over rough surfaces. Some ways to do that, if you're not able to transfer completely independently or get your bottom off, would include things like a sliding board. That's a smooth piece of wood that you can use to slide from your chair to the bed or any other surface that you want. If you're getting your wheelchair up at the same height as what you're transferring to, if you can, if you have a bed that goes up and down. And then if you're in bed, you know, keep trying not to keep the head of the bed up too high because you tend to slide down in bed. So some of the things that you can use are a draw sheet to help, you know, that two people on the side of your bed, if they need to help you, can use a draw sheet to either scoot you up or pull you and turn you side to side. Those are kinds of things that prevent those kind of mechanical injuries. Other mechanical injuries are the pressure injuries from when you're laying too long on one space, particularly if it's not, doesn't have some sort of padding on it for you.
Great. Thank you. And Flo, is there anything you wanted to add?
I don't think so. I think the boards are important. Cushioning, with the right cushioning when possible. And yeah, lifting. If you're going to, when you're moving from place to place, you got to lift those hips up.
Great. So we also know that keeping the skin clean and dry is important to skin health. Are there any types of bathing or hygiene practices that can contribute to this hygiene? Flo, do you want to answer this one?
Start by a mild soap. You don't want anything too strong because it tends to dry out the skin. And avoid also with that is using extremely hot water, or hot water tends to also strip the skin more than it needs to be. You can pat dry instead of using a towel and rubbing up and down. Yeah, let's see. Oh, the creams, moisture barrier creams are pretty important. We use them obviously for babies when they're in diapers, but you can still use them in this case, especially in creases and just anything to protect the skin from getting excessively moist or staying that way. Let's see, if for those who need to use undergarments or pads to clean and change those as soon as possible, because excrement, urine and feces is very hard on the skin. They're acidic and they can create skin damage very quickly.
So we mentioned earlier that nutrition can affect skin health. Can you explain more about the role nutrition plays, and how can someone utilize a healthy diet to prevent skin breakdown? Janet, do you want to answer this one?
Well, there's kind of some supplemental kinds of things that you can get in your nutrition that are important for skin health. Those, and it's much better if you can get those nutrients from your diet rather than from, you know, just taking supplements. And some of the things that are important for skin include omega-3 fatty acids, and you can get those from salmon and flaxseed. Vitamin C is important. I think we all know a lot about where to get vitamin C from. Citrus and fruits, strawberries, broccoli is a good way. Vitamin A from vegetables that are green and leafy. And zinc comes from seafood, meat or eggs, and then protein. And especially when you have a skin breakdown that's occurred, having a diet that is healthy, high in protein is really important for helping with skin breakdown. Also, just eating a balanced diet and maintaining a healthy weight, as we said, is really important for skin breakdown, for preventing skin breakdown and treating skin breakdown.
Great. And Flo, anything to add?
Just, I think water. Staying hydrated as much as possible. And I know that comes with extra challenges. Being out and about, especially if you're concerned about continence or having to cath more frequently, but really hydration is very important for a lot of things, even your skin. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great. So how does rehabilitation play a role in prevention of skin breakdown? Can someone develop an at-home regimen? What do you want to do?
Yes, there that you could definitely develop a home program of something with the with whatever you can have at home, any kind of exercise or use of muscles and your extremities. You will need to increase muscle mass and strength or increase flexibility. This also improves your cardiovascular endurance or circulation in general, which is great for your skin cells, for all your cells and your organs. But yeah, and the movement and the extra mass that you gain from muscles can help prevent the bony structures from putting too much pressure or causing too much pressure on skin from sitting and other things. There's therapies that use electrical stimulation, like biking. There's weight bearing or gait training. All of those help with a lot of things. You can use video games or programs like that, online programs like that for dancing, exercise programs. There's YouTube videos for yoga and modified yoga. Yeah. Let's see, what else? Janet, what else?
Oh, I think that sounds good. Absolutely. Just keeping active is important for everything in spinal cord injury.
Awesome. And just a quick follow-up to that, is there some healthcare provider specifically that can help someone develop a routine or find these resources, like occupational therapists, or is there a specific place you would recommend someone go if they're looking to implement some of those programs? Do you want to answer that one?
Let's see. There are usually physical medicine rehabilitation physicians that can direct people to physical therapy programs. Yes, you definitely need a physical therapist or occupational therapist to help you develop a program, a home program, preferably someone who has experience with spinal cord injuries or / diseases that can modify a program that they might use for an able-bodied person or for what's important with somebody who lives in a wheelchair.
Right. Awesome. So we know that prolonged pressure on a spot of the body can potentially cause a pressure ulcer. Can you talk about ways to prevent this and the importance of repositioning? I know you briefly already talked about it, Janet, but if you could just add anything you might have missed.
When you're seated in a wheelchair, you need to do weight shifts about every 15 minutes or so, and you will get used to what your body needs to be able to change positions and keep your skin clear. When you're laying in bed, you need to turn every 2 to every 4 hours, unless you have a really good mattress that allows you to stay in one position longer. Staying off of your backside if you're sitting in a wheelchair all day is a really good way to relieve pressure on your bottom. So making sure that you're turning side to side in bed, that you're using pillows to pad bony prominences, keeping your heels floating, meaning putting pillows underneath the back of your leg to keep your heels off the bed rather than putting pressure on your heels. And then if you are safe, sleeping on your stomach. Sleeping on your stomach is a really great way to prevent pressure ulcers because there's less pressure points when you're sleeping on your prone. And as a bonus, you get to stretch your hip flexors and your hamstrings and all those other muscles that are, when you're sitting in a wheelchair, are basically shortened during the day. So if it's at all possible, you have to be sure that you can breathe well when you're positioned on your stomach. But that's a really great way to give your skin a break during the night.
Great. And Flo, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah.
Great. And you mentioned, Janet, some pillows and pads that can be used. Is there any other equipment that can help prevent pressure ulcers? And if so, what can be used?
So, you know, everybody with paralysis and decreased sensation needs therapeutic surfaces. And when we talk about that, we're talking about like pressure relieving wheelchair cushions, getting a cushion that allows you to sit for longer periods of time and distributes your weight on both the bottom of your seat and even on the backrest of your wheelchair that is custom made for you. You need to have a physical therapist help you decide which cushion works best for you. And often they will do something called pressure mapping, where they put a mat on top of the cushion and then you sit on it and it shows where all the pressure points are. And that way they can find a cushion that works particularly well for you. And then making sure that you keep that cushion in good shape. Sometimes you have to squish the foam or the gel around. If you have a gel chair, if you have an inflatable cushion, you have to make sure it's properly inflated, because they only work as well as they are maintained. And then you need to make sure that they stay in good condition and keep an eye on them. Pressure relieving mattresses for your bed are often very helpful, but can be difficult to get unless you already have skin breakdown, which is, I know, crazy, but that's the way our system works right now. But even without a specific therapeutic pressure relieving mattress, some people do things like getting a memory foam mattress may work well for some people, or a sleep number bed, or even egg crate type cushions. Some are better than others, but they can also be helpful for relieving pressure.
Great. Flo, anything else you'd like to add?
I just keep in mind that wheelchair cushions, like anything with the wheelchair, takes time to replace. So I would not wait until it gives you an injury, a pressure injury, or it starts bothering your skin in any way. I would start trying to think ahead and look ahead and work with your vendor to make sure that your cushion stays current and is the best possible thing, because you spend so much time in it and it needs to be the best it can be, really.
Great. Thank you. That's all great advice. And then my last question for prevention is, how can muscle spasms contribute to skin breakdown? And how can someone better control them? Flo, do you want to take this one?
Let's see. Some muscle spasms, sometimes they are beneficial to certain people. It can help them change position. It transfers, believe it or not. It just depends on which way the legs go. Too much spasticity definitely can cause a rubbing and a friction in places that you can't control. And at bed, and getting into bed or trying to get out of bed. So your healthcare provider, your PM&R, your specialist, your physician can help you, hopefully, best manage that spasticity with medication or other things. But we have found that exercise and range of motion, they're two good ways that you can reduce that spasticity, in addition to some medication that can control that. Let's see, things that can increase muscle spasticity. Braces need to be fitting properly, worn correctly in the straps, making sure that's not causing any kind of pressure or noxious stimuli that can cause extra spasticity. Bladder and bowel, we have found if there's a UTI, you can definitely get more spasms from that as well in your legs from having a UTI. Same thing if you're having bowel issues. So unfortunately, those programs have to be also in place, or you can get increased spasticity. And like I said, again, any kind of noxious stimuli like a burn or skin breakdown, ingrown toenail, there's a lot of things that cause spasticity. And sometimes you have to be a kind of a detective to figure that one out. But yeah, that's some ways that it contributes to skin breakdown. There are a few things you can do to control it. And that's, yeah, prevention and working with your doctor to get medication if needed. And your physical therapist.
Awesome. We've talked about prevention of skin breakdown. And unfortunately, even if you practice all of the best practices for that, you can still have some minor skin breakdown occurs. What does minor skin breakdown look like, Janet?
Skin breakdown generally can start as a red or purple spot on people with light colored skin, or could be shiny purple, darker blue spot on dark skin. And it doesn't fade either when you touch it, which is called blanching. Usually if you touch your skin, the redness will go away, it will become white, and then it will get redder again. But when you have an injury to your skin, it often doesn't do what we call blanch. The area doesn't go away within about 20 minutes of taking the whatever caused the pressure. The area may feel hard, it may feel squishy, it may feel warmer than the skin around it. And those are all kind of the first signs of skin breakdown. It may not look like much of anything, especially if the skin's not broken, but unfortunately, sometimes these can get a whole lot worse. If your skin, if the sort of the outermost layer of the skin becomes blistered or scabbed or has a small opening on the surface, this usually is fairly easily treatable with keeping pressure off and treatment that we'll talk about in a little bit. At this stage, the skin breakdown is pretty much reversible if we take care of it. But if the irritation or the pressure or friction continues, then it can rapidly progress to a more dangerous type of skin injury.
Got it. And Flo, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, for minor, that's usually how it starts. And that's why, again, the skin checks, because you want to catch it as early as possible if it's something that has to do with pressure, if it has something to do with friction. Yeah.
Okay. So how is redness or minor skin breakdown treated? I know Janet went into it a little bit, but Flo, would you mind answering that?
Sure. It's whatever the irritant is, whatever started it. If it's pressure, you need to get pressure off of it as much as possible. If it's friction, you need to troubleshoot ways to prevent that friction from happening. If the skin is open, you can always contact a healthcare provider to try and get directions on wound care. Generally, you want to keep that area clean. You can use a mild soap and water or a saline keep it somewhat dry. Don't use hydrogen peroxide, especially straight, or iodine to dry it completely. Wounds heal, open wounds, even if they're superficial, they like to keep a certain amount of moisture in that wound bed, and that helps healing more than if it's completely and totally dry. If you're going to cover it, which is a good idea, you can use something that doesn't stick. A Telfa pad is what was created to cover the wound without sticking. A lot of prepackaged bandages use a similar thing. And you can protect that from the clothing, protect it from getting infected. And then you change that dressing once or twice a day, especially if it gets soiled or wet. You just have to, now you know that it's there, you keep watching it and make sure it doesn't get worse. Minor burns can be blistering, treated the same way. When you get into a larger surface, you might need help with that. You might need to seek a healthcare provider or go to the emergency room. Burns can be, or like pressure wounds, they can turn into something very different from what they look like when they first began. So I think that might be it.
Great. And how can someone tell whether the damage is being caused by pressure from sitting or lying down? What are the most vulnerable areas, then, Janet?
So this, like Florence said, when you have an area of skin breakdown, you have to become a detective and think about, okay, where's the area of redness? Is it someplace that I'm sitting on? Is it someplace that I'm laying on? Is it underneath a brace? Could it be where my seatbelt goes? Is there something on my backrest that's got a wrinkle? Is it my clothing that has a wrinkle? Often it's fairly easy to figure out potentially whether it's coming from sitting or from laying. Sometimes it can be a little bit difficult, but when you're sitting, the most common places are on your sits bones, you know, that you're sitting right on, or the back of your hips that are up against your headrest. The back of your heels are areas that can be affected when you're sitting in your wheelchair. When you're laying in bed, it's often more bony prominences, like the areas between your knees, on the outside of your ankles, on the outside of your hips. If you're laying flat on your back, it can be your sacrum or your shoulder blades are areas. And in young children, the back of the head is a bit more susceptible because their heads are quite big when they're young. So we do see injuries to the back of the head. Also, some people don't have sensation in their ears, and they're susceptible to breakdown mostly when laying, but sometimes if they have a head array on their wheelchair to do their driving or the back of their head. So you just need to think about what those areas are. And then if it's from someplace that you're laying, you need to figure out how to reposition or not lay on the area that's getting the pressure. If you're sitting in your wheelchair, you may need to make an appointment with your wheelchair vendor or your physical therapist or seating clinic to be able to figure out, do you need a new cushion? And making sure that your cushion is properly inflated, that it's not put in backward. Lots of different things that may be causing that injury to your skin.
Great. Florence, anything like that?
Yeah, I think what I have seen a lot of too is, especially with our higher injuries, is that, or lying down in bed, is the elbows can be an area that can suffer from a pressure injury. And sitting in a chair wheelchair with the, you have to check your arm rests and make sure that they're hitting in the right places. And then when you're lying in bed, the cushioning as much as possible and movement, relieving pressure or changing positions. I know, which is difficult at night.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And what is the difference between a scrape and a tear? And what do you recommend for people who are experiencing scrapes or tears during transfers? Lawrence, do you want to take this one?
So a scrape is what we think of as an abrasion. It's over, I think, a slightly bigger area of the surface of the skin than, say, perhaps a tear, which may look more like a cut, or it's a more of a linear injury. The skin, an abrasion, is scraped from a rough surface. A skin tear is more of a pulling or a tugging, a dragging type of thing. They're both caused by friction or shearing. So for people who are experiencing those more frequently during transfers, a possibility to fix that is to visit with a physical therapist and work on fine-tuning your transfers, because they can sit and see and make sure that the amount of effort you're putting into it is clearing the surface, so that if you're clearing the surface, you're less likely to get caught up and scrape or tear on the surfaces that you're trying to move over. There's also equipment for those that are more dependent. We mentioned the transfer boards, and the BZ board is also a kind of a modified of that, where the circle moves with you. There's a circle on a board and it moves with you as you go from wheelchair to bed or surface to surface. There's Hoyer lifting, Hoyer lifts for those that cannot transfer safely on their own. Let's see what else. Janet?
I think the only other thing I'm thinking is, often, especially tears, it seems like when I've seen them the most, it's in areas that are moist. And so the moisture adds to that, making the skin more friable. So we see them on the bottom due to transfers, but almost always it seems like there's moisture in that area. So keeping dry and clean is a way that you can help to prevent those shear injuries and tear injuries. So that's the only other thing I can think to add.
Great. Thank you both. Can braces cause skin breakdown? And what should someone do if their area of breakdown is under a brace? Janet?
Skin breakdown under braces is common, really common in children, because they grow so fast. And the braces that were fitting yesterday in sometimes a few short months are too small. Adults tend to have a bit less problems once they have a brace and the brace has been fully adjusted. And that can take a little while when you get a new brace to make sure that there's no pressure points. But if you take your brace off and you have an area of redness that lasts greater than 20 minutes, you shouldn't wear that device any longer until you get it, most likely to the orthotist that made the brace, and they can often blow out areas like on your ankle that are causing redness. Also, strapping the braces too tight can maybe cause some areas of redness. It's a lot of trial and error when you first get your braces, but then usually once the braces are adjusted correctly for adults, unless they gain or lose weight, their braces can fit for quite some time. For children, it can be as often as every 6 months that kids need adjustment or replacement of their braces due to growth spurts.
Great. And Flo, anything to add?
It's just a thought that I had about braces, because, and this probably applies to the wheelchair and everything and a lot of other things, but summertime, braces, wearing braces, you have to wear them. You wear them in the summertime, and it can cause a lot of sweating underneath there. It can cause a lot of moisture buildup. And unfortunately, that's just another thing to be aware of and to try and check on, is to see that cotton, you're using maybe a cotton sock or knee-high sock or sleeve to help with that wicking away of any kind of sweat or moisture when you're wearing braces, because we see that often too in the summertime with people in wheelchairs, manual wheelchairs, power wheelchairs. Just the increase of temperature for the summertime can cause a lot of extra concerns for skin breakdown and skin folds and that kind of thing. So that was just a thought I had when we were talking about braces just now.
And triggered that a thought that I had too about, I have seen people, especially like Flo says, in the summer, get either yeast infection or even a fungal infection, athlete's feet in when they're using braces, because exactly like the excess moisture during the summer. So if you're having rashes that aren't seeming to go away, you may need to contact your healthcare provider for some information. And also just washing your braces with soap and water to help prevent that. I have seen that on occasion.
Good points, all good points. And thank you for bringing those up, because I know it's summer now and it gets hot out there for sure. So can skin breakdown occur in the diaper or a perineal area? And what are some remedies? If you want to take this one.
Okay, sure. Yeah, there you go. Summertime. Yes, definitely. Even if it's not summertime, the perineal area is, especially if you have to wear diapers, underpants, those kinds of things, pull-ups. Moisture, your skin does well with moisture, but only to a certain point, and then it becomes very fragile. And so sweating or urine, sometimes stool, so frequent changing of those diapers or underpants, it can be redness, it can be moisture associated skin damage. You can see it, just a redness where it seems like the epidermis is just peeling away. That's just because it hit its saturation point and it's no longer effective, and because the moisture has just been too much. And then on top of that, with the heat and moisture, you can see, like Janet said, fungal infections, yeast infections, very common. So skincare, perineal skincare is very important after a bowel program, after a bladder accident. Gentle soap, again, mild soap for the perineal area. Patting dry, definitely not rubbing dry with a towel. Skin barrier ointments, moisture barrier ointments and creams, very important. Doesn't need to be a whole lot. You don't have to lather on a whole bunch of a nice thin layer. Should be enough to help protect your skin. And then if you see these redness and bumps spreading, developing vesicles or oozing, it's very possible you'll need to see a healthcare provider about getting an appropriate cream to prevent or to treat these more problem areas. And make sure you're using absorbent underpads or briefs. They wick moisture as much as possible instead of trapping it. Sometimes it can be something like your laundry detergent as well, which may not cause necessarily problems in areas that you're not having a lot of moisture, but for those moisture areas, the skin can become extra sensitive to those kinds of things.
Great, thank you. And Jenna, anything to add? Nope. Great. That is all the questions I have for minor skin breakdown. But sometimes, unfortunately, serious skin breakdown can occur. Janet, what does serious skin breakdown look like?
Serious skin breakdown is caused when the tissue, it usually occurs due to pressure, and it occurs when, like, your internal bone is squishing your skin and the skin tissues between, say, your wheelchair cushion and your sit bone. And when that happens, all that skin is deprived of oxygen and the nutrients that it needs to take care of itself. And the tissue now has died, and there can be a large hole that can get very large that we have seen in some patients. And sometimes it doesn't take very long for that to happen, partly because you often don't see how much damage is being seen in those epidural and subcutaneous tissues, because the skin may not be open to begin with, but it may feel squishy or may feel hard. And then later on down the road, if the skin breaks open, then you can have a very large area that's affected. And this damage generally is seen through all the layers of the skin, and it can even be down to the bone. And in some cases, you can have infection of the bone, which is called osteomyelitis, if the wound is not taken good care of. You almost always will see some drainage, and that drainage may be clear or it could be purulent and have a foul odor. And it could be clear, it could be yellow, it could be green, and you may have redness in the area of skin around the wound, especially if there's some development of infection over time.
Okay. Flo, is there anything you'd like to add?
It's mostly pressure injuries, I think, that can become very serious. Usually if you see it on the surface, if there's a wound on the surface, one would hope that you see it, you can catch it and treat it. The tricky things about pressure injury is that it's not obvious on the surface, not for a while. And the damage only reveals itself over time. So that's why it's important that when Janet described blanching over pressure points, that's a pretty big indicator. If you cannot get that blanching when you press lightly on a reddened area, that you need to watch that. You need to relieve pressure from that, and then you watch that. Because if there is tissue damage, more serious tissue damage, it will make itself known. And it only takes, pressure injuries don't take long, a few hours, depending on the weight and where and your current health status. It can happen quickly. Usually when they break to the surface, then the wound has depth. And then that's something to be concerned about. I would not hesitate to at least contact some kind of healthcare provider to get some guidance on that, on a wound that an area that's been red, maybe squishy, maybe a little bit hard for a while, and then finally breaks into an open wound. When I say break the surface, I mean becomes an open wound. If it develops any kind of fibrous, tough kind of surface, but doesn't seem to be healing, that's not a good thing. And another healthcare professional needs some eyes on it. They may recommend a wound care clinic, and they specialize on things like that and can help get the right dressing on it, the right treatment, the right creams, the right whatever it is to help heal that wound. Yeah, so that's, I think, where I would go with that if you start seeing something like that.
Great. And so you kind of already touched on this, Florence, but how is serious skin breakdown treated?
Yeah, so the most serious, they have depth, these wounds. They start developing depth, and I mean, where it's not just a surface wound anymore, that more cratered type of look. And hopefully it doesn't extend to the bone, but it can, especially infection can make it worse. Bed rest, but off of the surface, usually it's in the sacral area and the sitting area. And unfortunately, that means not sitting anymore until that wound starts to heal. It could be weeks of bed rest, unfortunately. And trying to adjust you still want to pressure relief your other areas, but you cannot be on this area that has this wound now. And sometimes aggressive wound management may be slightly surgical, maybe IV antibiotics, wound vacs to try and help your body close that wound on its own and avoid surgery. Surgery usually, that's the last option if all these other treatments fail. It's called a wound flap. And then that's a bigger surgery on your backside, meaning more time that you have to be in bed. And that's a graft, a skin graft, to close that wound. Because trying non-surgical treatments in the body was not able to do that for whatever reason. Now, those surgeries are expensive, and it's weeks in the hospital followed by more weeks of home care and a specialized bed. And it can take up to months, really. And then it's more another seating clinic where you have to get adjustments to your cushion, perhaps. Yes. And it's not something you can leave untreated or leave for any length of time, because bone infection can seriously endanger your health. And also if an infection gets into your bloodstream, which is sepsis, and either one of those left untreated long enough, it can be fatal.
Flo mentioned that you should see a medical professional for these wounds if they get to a certain point. Janet, is there any specific point you would recommend someone see a medical professional when the wound gets to a certain point, or just is it intuitional?
I think anytime you have a wound or a red area, unless you, especially if you're newly injured and you need to be in contact with healthcare professionals, the nurses in your physiatrist's office probably have a lot of experience with wounds. The physical therapists have experience, but I think you should always, it's better safe than sorry. And then you get guidance on treatment, and they can guide you when to call back if there's a problem. Anytime that you have an open wound that isn't that you're doing the treatment for minor wounds and it's getting worse, then certainly you need to see a healthcare professional. If you have a wound with any depth, in most cases, your health professionals will probably refer you to a wound center, which is really, I think, the best way to go, because often a wound center can be identified at a hospital close to your home, where you can go and get specialized treatment and you don't have to drive long distances. Because in general, when you have a wound, a serious wound, they're going to be wanting to look at it at least once a week. And as Flo said, they may need to do some procedures to take out dead tissue and things like that. I just can't emphasize enough that you want it treated and you want a professional that's used to treating wounds to be looking at it, to be determining the best treatment for you. Because often when you go to a wound center and they're using specialized dressings, that wound can get better a lot quicker than just using old-fashioned kinds of dressings. Gauze, just packing with gauze or things like that, which you may get instructed to do at your primary care provider or someplace like that.
Got it. And Florence, anything to add?
Well, I just say, I would put in my bets on a wound care clinic as well, wound care center. Technology, there are a lot of dressings very specific to different kinds of injuries and different kinds of wounds. And they are the ones who see all different kinds of wounds. So yeah, I would trust a wound care center if you can, definitely.
Great. So Flo, you mentioned that antibiotics might be used in a previous question. Can you just expand on what the role of antibiotics are and when are they necessary? When are they not?
Okay, sure. Usually it's a healthcare provider. It is a healthcare provider that would make that call when assessing the wound. If it seems like it depends on the severity of the wound, but I think if it's showing active signs of infection, oozing, yellow, green, that kind of thing, if the surrounding tissue is also angry and red and blistered and showing signs of infection, definitely if they identify osteomyelitis, which is infection of the bone, as Janet had said, which they can do on x-ray. If they take blood samples and by this time, I think for something like osteomyelitis or sepsis, that would definitely bring you into the ED or the ER, and they can identify sepsis through blood cultures. Definitely would need IV antibiotics in those two cases. Bone infection, that's the only way you can really treat it. It does not get better, and it can definitely get worse, and it can be fatal. And the same thing with blood sepsis. Yep. So for wounds that need it, and you're not feeling well by then, definitely not feeling well, I would hope that nobody would allow a wound or let their wound get that bad. Osteomyelitis, by the time the bone is involved, most of the time it's a big open wound.
And Jenna, anything you'd like to add?
I think that's good.
Thank you. We talked about how technology has really evolved over the last, especially couple decades. Are there any tools or apps that can help with tracking skin health or managing care routines? Or in general, are there any other resources that you think would be helpful? Janet?
Everybody has cell phones these days, and a lot of people have smartwatches that have alarms, and people don't necessarily want an audible alarm going off every 15 minutes, but I know my smartwatch has a vibration that can be set to go off like every 15 minutes, so that's one way. For reminders, for pressure reliefs. There are watches, just other we use for kids, that you can buy a watch that is, it's a watch that they often use for people that for bedwetting, but you can use that for pressure reliefs. I did do a peruse of the app store to see if I could find any apps for skin breakdown. I didn't find anything. Flo, do you?
No, I did the same. I only found maybe a couple of apps, but I believe they were more geared towards healthcare professionals in staging what's called staging pressure injuries, which is a universal form as far as well unifying the language of identifying pressure injuries. How bad are they? That's what kind of dressings might be involved. I think I don't know if I would direct anybody else to that except a healthcare professional. And I did not get a chance to look, but I did mean to. I'm wondering if the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, their website, might have some discussions on wound care prevention or just skin care in general.
Great. They're a great resource. And we do work with them sometimes on things. Yeah. Great to check that out if people are wondering if there's resources for people with paralysis. So those are all the questions I have for you. And thank you so much for answering all of my questions. I know there were a lot. I did want to open the floor and allow you both to provide any parting advice or space to mention anything we didn't cover today that you think is important. Janet, if you'd like to start.
When I've researched skin breakdown and wounds for spinal cord injury, I most of the time it's like, you know, what dressings heal better and what, how do you prevent wounds and things like that. But I did see an interesting research study that interviewed people that had gone years and years without having skin breakdown and then suddenly had an area of skin breakdown that was that required a muscle flap and for treatment. And I thought this article was so interesting because the thing that came to light was that these pressure wounds occurred when there was a change in the person's circumstance, loss of a trusted care provider was something that happened where maybe they didn't get turned enough. I've seen one of the other things was that somebody left a cell phone in bed underneath of them when they rolled them. Others was somebody got a new job and they were being required to travel for their job. So they were spending much more time traveling and they didn't want to say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't go this long and stuff like that. So I think it's really, really important. And I tell this to my kids that are going to college, be careful. Your circumstances are changing markedly. You're going to want to go out and have fun, but you're going to have to continue to be diligently aware of your skin. So I thought that was just something that was just very enlightening for me. And I try and share that with my patients a lot.
Great. That's really great advice. And thank you for sharing, Janet. Lawrence, anything you'd like to end with?
I can't think of anything. We just...
We had a lot of questions.
It happens. It
a lot
happens.
Of questions today.
I think it is a fear and it is an anxiety for people with paralysis, for people who live in wheelchairs, for people with altered sensation. And it may happen. And that's okay. You do the preventative things as much as you can and seek help when in doubt. I think I have a lot of fair patients ask, and that's great because most of the time it's minor, but at least they asked. So I think don't be afraid to seek guidance and advice from a healthcare provider. And I hope that there is a healthcare provider in everyone's lives that they feel comfortable going to.
great advice as well. And I appreciate both of you spending your time here today with me to answer these questions. I know our community really appreciates it, and I really appreciate it. So thank you both. And I hope to speak with you more on topics such as these in the future on more episodes of our podcast. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you to our Ask the Expert sponsors, Amgen, Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease, Genentech, and UCB. Amgen is focused on the discovery, development, and commercialization of medicines that address critical needs for people impacted by rare, autoimmune, and severe inflammatory diseases. They apply scientific expertise and courage to bring clinically meaningful therapies to patients. Amgen believes science and compassion must work together to transform lives. Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease is a global biopharmaceutical company focused on serving patients with severe and rare disorders through the innovation, development, and commercialization of life-transforming therapeutic products. Their goal is to deliver medical breakthroughs where none currently exist, and they are committed to ensuring that patient perspective and community engagement are always at the forefront of their work. Founded more than 40 years ago, Genentech is a leading biotechnology company that discovers, develops, manufactures, and commercializes medicines to treat patients with serious and life-threatening medical conditions. The company, a member of the Roche Group, has headquarters in South San Francisco, California. For additional information about the company, please visit www.gene.com. UCB innovates and delivers solutions that make real improvements for people living with severe diseases. They partner with and listen to patients, caregivers, and stakeholders across the healthcare system to identify promising innovations that create valuable health solutions.